Welcome to Hot Breath Comedy Fam. On Monday, May 13th, I am teaching a clean comedy workshop. The last four I have taught sold out very quickly. So if you want to learn about clean comedy, the business side, where the line is, how to write clean comedy, go to the link in the description of this episode and we'll see you there. What's goody, Hot Breathiverse? We're back, baby. This is Hot Breath Live, our weekly live stream, where me, Joel Byers, and fellow comedian Yoshi So go live on our YouTube channel to help answer your questions and to share our own experiences in this comedy game and bring on guests like today's special guest, who, as you know, our mission here is to help cultivate self-made comics. And our guest today is certainly one of those, and doing it in a very unique and authentic way that you are going to be able to learn from to help start creating your own success, which is what we're all about here. And welcome to you watching live. Welcome to you listening to the podcast. I do want to start this episode by sharing, before we bring on our guest, sharing a fun comedy experience I had this weekend. I feel like the Hot Breathverse would enjoy this, as they can see where you just never know where comedy's going to take you. I had a gig...
Yeah,
in the Cayman Islands this weekend.
What? Just a soft flex. It was a soft flex.
Out of left field. I mean,
most people just say the Caymans, but you said the whole world.
Like, oh, I didn't realize there was a difference.
I need people to know. No. The Cayman Islands.
Oh, yeah. I showed up looking like I was colonizing that piece. I showed up there looking like Christopher Columbus there to reclaim his territory.
Caucasian Caymans, yep.
Was incredible. And it just, I don't share it as a flex, but more of just something we've talked about on here before for comedians to remember, as, you know, we get asked all the time about how do I book this gig, or, you know, dealing with imposter syndrome or jealousy of other comedians and what they have going on. And we've said time and time again, focus on what you can control. And
yep,
all of your opportunities are going, not all, the vast majority are going to come from other comedians.
Big facts. Big
now,
facts. There's a that noise. Yes.
That's why. Oh, I can play that noise. There we go. So that's why it's so important. One of our mantras here is to be nice, be funny at every level, because you never know who's going to be who at what time. You may be in an open mic that's on a Monday at 11 p.m. and you're performing in front of just comics. The person who runs that open mic may be running the biggest show in the city in 5 years. And if you're a jerk to them then, trust me, they will not forget. So
ooh,
I just
remember.
Wanted... this to be an example. I booked this event from a comedian I've known for years and years and years and years. His name's Sean Larkins. He's a OG in the game. He writes on he's written on Saturday Entertainer shows. He's went on the road with him and a bunch of other dope comics. And just an OG that helped me early on in my career with stage time. And then he knew the booker of this event, and they were looking for White Boy Joe. You know, they needed the plug. They needed the plug on white people. And, you know, I holla. You know, I'm the connect. You want a white comic through Atlanta, you come through me, fam. These are my streets around here. So, you know, this is a guy I've known over 10 years who, down the road, hey, Joel, here's this awesome opportunity for you to perform in the Cayman Islands. So I just wanted not a flex, but more... it came from the network and just being nice and being funny for years.
It's okay that it's a flex. We got to be okay with flexes. It's a flex. Just accept it. It's a flex.
Maybe an aspirational flex. Well, I don't know.
It's a good thing. We're telling comedians to use their network to be nice.
Yes.
And then you get to go to the Cayman Islands. Hell yeah, that's a flex. That's an awesome thing. That's how it's supposed to happen.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, then I appreciate that. Okay. Well, then.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're not getting away from flexes. You know what I'm saying? We got to embrace the humble part. The humble part is what happens before you got the gig. That's when you were humble.
Yeah.
I just play. You never know where comedy's going to take you. So it was a really cool experience, and I was really nervous because I had never performed somewhere like this before, and I was worried.
What was the actual? So it's so funny because you're just saying the place. You haven't described the actual venue. You just said, I've been performing for Cayman Islands. The whole damn island got to
see. Oh, sorry.
Just the way that you described it. No.
I was on the beach.
Everybody at the islands got to see your boy, Joe Byers.
Well, I'm sure anyone who saw me did not forget me. Just some tall white guy walking around with SPF 50 smudged on his face and an SPF shirt. I was on the beach in full attire, you know, no sun was getting me. You wouldn't even know I was at the island. I came back paler than when I got there. I was SPF'd out, fam. But the guy who runs it, who he's been doing the show for years, he actually did this one at a movie theater, which I'd never done a show at a movie theater. But I think it's a brilliant idea. It was an amazing setting. They had sound in the room, was like it coming through the speakers, and they had a bar set up in there. It was like a whole vibe. Like,
cool.
I've heard of people doing shows in movie theaters, but this is my first time doing one, and that made me think, oh man, maybe we should try one here, like in Atlanta.
Space.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea, which I know. Like a comedian in Toronto, Zahan, is doing one. And I've heard of a few others, but I'd never done it. It was very cool to see. And I was thinking maybe it's a good, unique venue to try here.
Very unique.
But yeah, it was in a movie theater. It was people of all races and ages, really. I mean, it was all adults, but older people, younger people in their 20s, couples. Just girls' night out. There were some just dudes in there. Like, it was a pretty good mix of all races and backgrounds, which I was just nervous of how I didn't know what was going to relate to them. I hadn't felt that in a long time. So it was really good to be out of my comfort zone of like, oh my gosh, what's going to work and what's not? And then you remember that they're people.
Yep.
And they laugh at life and they connect with authenticity. And that's.
Of course.
That's why we tell comics all the time to write from their own life, because that's what's most relatable to everyone.
And no one can take that from you.
Yeah, and no one can steal you, essentially. Yeah. So I was like, I was very nervous. And then I got in there and it's just they laughed from the jump. And I was like, oh, yeah, we're just having a silly goose time.
Yeah.
Just kicking our leg up, you know. That leg kick, my leg kick's getting good. That's going to be my MJ silhouette logo, is my leg coming. All right. Coming. I've been doing a leg kick a lot lately. People have been liking it. That's my new prop comedy.
I've seen it.
Yeah, it's people digging it.
Yeah. All right, from the walls to super, the leg kick. I like that. I can't imagine what's next after the leg kick.
The dab and leg kick.
I want to see Joel pirouette in a set. Just to...
But super dope show. I did the show with Alfred Kanga, who is a comedian out of Dallas by way of Zimbabwe.
Yeah, Alfred absolutely is really funny. Yeah.
Hilarious, dude.
Yeah.
Hilarious. And super cool, too. Super cool dude. And then Daphne Springs was the other comedian on the show.
Yeah, I know Daphne. We met a couple years ago when she was here for...
She was here for Skullfest.
And then, and we met this year, like, kind of like just officially met, because we weren't on shows together, but very cool people. Great, like, social media presence. She's actually might not be a bad guest to have in terms of just like the way that she built her social media presence.
She was talking, because this was a good trip, too, because, you know, it's talking about. And this is something I've talked about in like the clean comedy workshop, is if you want to learn clean comedy, surround yourself with clean comedians, start studying clean comedians, really become a part, make that part of your environment, and you'll start to absorb it. Like, you're the product of the five people around you type deal. So you know, I'm working with comedians who are in the Cayman Islands. Like, these are working, business-minded comedians. So, like, yeah. A lot of the weekend was, like, us spitting game on comedy club deals and who's making what and what the breakdowns are. And yeah. She was talking about social media and the money and where it was to where it is now. Like, apparently social media money is, like, way down. Mm-hmm. But she was talking about where it was and racks on racks on racks, bro.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
so media people are printing money.
Dude, I remember we were hanging out and she was like, no, I make my money from social media.
Bro.
It was just like, and she was like, I do fine. Like, she was like, I pay the bills with social media money. I was like, that's freaking dope. I mean, I just didn't know, right? Like, you assume that there's some people like online that've got like tons of follows or whatever. You just never know, right? But yeah, she was like, yeah, this is how it comes. And yeah, super nice, super just like very relatable. Was it a clean show as well? So it was soup all clean?
No, it wasn't clean.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-mm. I didn't know because you said you had so many different types of people. I didn't know if it was like meant to be a clean show or not.
No, I mean, it was all like adults. There weren't kids there, but it was just like all, there were some white people there. There were like Caribbean, like it was all different. Like ethnicities there, I guess, is what I meant to say.
Was it like a weekend show? Was it like a couple of shows? Like, what was the breakdown of like, was it just
a Friday uh-huh. show. We flew in Thursday.
Gotcha.
And then left Saturday. We did like a radio show on Friday to help promote it and did like a ticket giveaway. It felt very official.
Yeah.
And he took us around to like the booker took us to like a super authentic like food spot, like the local haunch. Ooh. Like oxtail goat beard
chicken. The one thing I truly enjoy doing that, like when I go to festivals like in other cities, just like immersing in like the city.
Mm-hmm.
That's so awesome.
We got a good feel of like the culture and the community and all that there, which was a lot of fun and something I hadn't really done. So it was super, super fun show. I wore a linen shirt, not to brag. I don't want to keep bragging, but I wore a white linen shirt.
Was it an all white party?
Well, when I was on stage, it was, but whether they want it to be or not, white linen, Mandarin collar, couple top buttons undone. We had the chest hair out. We were leg flip up, you know, hitting with a leg kick. You know, we were doing it up. White shoes. We were into it.
I can definitely see you coming by. They're like, is this guy going to do our taxes?
Oh, it was great.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it was. No, that's awesome, dude. That's sweet.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun and just a good, learned a lot of good business game being shared. And now that since we were talking about social media, Kim Cattrall had asked about a video I had go viral on Instagram, which I did have a video go viral on Instagram. This is something I learned from when we interviewed Leah Rudick, was just like posting stuff you enjoy creating, you know?
Yeah.
That's what's going to be most sustainable. So I started posting these like funny memes videos.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted like one about Costco that it's like over 1 million views.
Nice.
0 followers. So Kim asked me about it. She was saying, and what time did you post it and what day?
Yeah.
None of that mattered.
None of it
0
matters.
Followers.
None of it matters. Yeah. But hey.
And I reached out to a friend with like a popular meme page like that, who he has hundreds of thousands of followers now. But he's like, oh yeah, dude, you have to post a ton of those for it to start getting follower traction. He's like, most people share that type of content, but they don't connect with it enough to then hit the follow button. So when I say 0, I mean, I may have less now, actually.
People were like, no, we'll leave.
They just share it. You know, people send each other reels all the time. So people just shared it and then it got views and that was it. So
that's hilarious.
That's what happened there. There was no science. But my friend said that the ones that of his that have gone majorly viral, it's like he posted it and then like a few weeks later, even a few months later, something may pop off. Like, it's not, most of the time you post it and then it just explodes. So it was cool to see, but I haven't even, like, since the follower, like, since literally, like, nothing changed, I was just like, all right, cool. I enjoy making this style of content, so I'll keep making it.
Yeah.
And mix it up. But it was cool to see something work. That's literally the first video I've ever had work remotely. So it was fun, but that was it.
That's
awesome. I didn't even tell my wife about it because the follower count was the exact same. Like, I don't think the brand deals are calling quite yet.
Not yet. But they coming.
They coming, fam. They coming. We speaking that into existence. Amen.
That's hilarious.
I love it. But yeah, great question there, Kim. Yeah, there was no rhyme or reason or science. I went to Costco alone and then posted a meme about it. And people really enjoyed it just enough to share it and not follow it. Oh, that's lovely. Oh, and hey, Bobby Sutton and Rob Augusta, Joel Long in here and Wise Guy. What do you think, Rob B? What do you think, Yoshi? Shall we bring on our guest?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to tell you about my weekend, but you know, it don't matter. You know, I'm just...
What was yours?
It was just a regular weekend of shows. I had a show that I hosted, and it was a interesting show because we started off like pretty hot, but the crowd, there was like a separate entity, it was at a brewery, and there was a wedding party, but they had like seats in the back of the brewery, but they decided to come up. And they were just talking the entire time.
Oh.
And so, like, I did my best to try to corral the comedians to, like, push through it. But they were pretty loud. And, you know, and I asked them, hey, guys, could we be quiet? Because, you know, this part is for the show. And it didn't get really any better. So we are, like, two comedians deep already. And then there's, like, maybe like 40 people, 40 of these people who are just not paying attention to the comedy show.
Oh.
And then they're like, hey, we do this thing in our family where we give somebody like, you know, this ugly picture or something like that for the next person that gets married, some kind of family tradition. So they're like, oh, can we use your mic? Blah, blah, blah. I was like,
oh.
Sure. I was like, sure. I was like, you're not paying attention to anything. So maybe you'll pay attention to this. And I said, hey, the deal is, if you do this, I'm going to need you to pay attention. So
bartering with the crowd to pay attention. That's amazing.
Yeah. We do this thing. They do their thing. I give them the light. I was like, you're running long already. Right. We do this thing and we get back to the show. And then all of a sudden they're not paying attention. I was like, oh, I shouldn't have. You don't negotiate with terrorists. So I learned my lesson there of just not trying to negotiate with people. They weren't going to pay attention. They just wanted to use me for my mic. And luckily, I had some very funny comedians on the show that were just good entertainment just to have with me, just to see the chaos that it was. And it was just like interesting. So Holly Ballantyne was supposed to super hilarious. One of my favorite.
She's great.
People on the
yeah.
Was supposed to headline and we were going already long and she's like, is it okay if I don't? I was like, absolutely. You don't have to, let's not do this. And then I did her show the next day, which was in Covington, Georgia. Amazing spot. Great show. And that was just fun. Like one show completely kind of went bonkers and then the other show went well. And you're like, oh, this is comedy. This is how it goes.
That sums it up. Yeah, it really does. Why was this like, was this show like, I don't, did people not know there was going to be a show this night?
No, it's
not at all.
They're there for comedy. Everybody that was sitting that was there for
so
comedy.
Everyone was at a brewery like, let's go out and drink. And then all of a sudden a comedy show just happens.
No, They're there for comedy. There is a show, like, it is there for comedy.
Okay.
But the brewery has, like, this separate area where they, like, rent out space, kind of like where the brewery area, like, where all the big thingamajiggers are. It's that brewery show that you were at.
Jiggas. Like, yeah, yeah.
Tables or whatever set up. But all the people back there decided to not stay where they were supposed to be, come up and keep talking.
Okay. I thought you were saying everyone was ignoring the show. Just this crowd, this crew came and ruined it.
But they were already there, right? It was just this wedding party.
Right.
That had their own section, but wanted to be a part of the show. But then it wasn't like a strategic thing where they're like, all right, hey guys, let's all pay attention. They just thought we would make them a part of the show, which some comedians did, but it wasn't good. They weren't paying attention. And right. So it was just more like an uphill battle of just trying to get them to pay attention. And they were just super loud for the space, but I kept trying to turn up my speaker, but then that would have been too loud for the people that were paying attention. Mm-hmm. And so it was just kind of like a, oh my God. And then I think this is where Mr. Nice Guy, I fall for the okie doke and I tell them, yeah, yeah, you can do your thing. Just believing in human decency that they will be good and pay attention.
Yeah. Give an inch, they take a mile. Yep. Yeah. It's like that. Like, I've seen several like bachelorette parties just tank a show. Or people celebrating birthdays and they think they're going, like, the show is, yeah, everyone's there for them and not the show. I've seen that happen a lot. Yeah, that's unfortunate. See, it's not like you gave it every opportunity to work out.
I did. And yeah, and it was, you know, it was a good learning lesson of just like, all right, just take more control and don't engage. Yeah, I truly believe. Never again am I engaging with terrorists. Like, if you're not paying attention, you're not going to all of a sudden start paying attention because I give you the mic. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking in my head that somehow it would work. And then while one of the comedians, like, while they were doing their little birthday thing, some of the comedians were talking in the back and they turned around and looked at us like, why are you guys talking while we're trying to do our thing? And we were like, are you kidding me right now?
It's kind of like what we talked about last week with dealing with hecklers is remembering it's like the whole room versus the heckler. So it's like these people were able to infiltrate and kind of take over the whole show for everyone, which it's a delicate balance. Like you said, you were trying to make fun in the most of the situation and you just learned a valuable lesson there. Do not negotiate with terrorists. Don't give the heckler the mic. It's giving them a hand grenade and they're going to pull the pin and blow up the whole show. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Learned my lesson on that one. And that was a first for me. I was like, oh, this will be fine. It'll be okay.
Of course.
No, I've never given anybody the mic. That's never been a thing. And then I was like, oh, it'll be fine, guys. Like, in my head, I was like, it's going to turn out to be this perfect thing of just, everybody, kumbaya, we're all sing together.
Right.
Did not work out whatsoever. So, another thing I also remember, like, I appreciate the comics that were there because they were soldiering through it. And I realized, like, as a comedy host or producer, you also have to sort of, like, make sure your people are good, even while everybody's going through, like... Everybody, I don't want to say everybody struggled, but they all had to deal with the BS, which is not fun as a producer or a host to see. So it was good that we had like some camaraderie about that, about how fun that was not.
Everyone left there with a purple heart. Yeah, that was. And then the next day it was a killer show, which I think is important for comics to hear also that this game is so up and down.
So up and down.
That just know that the lower the lows, the higher the highs, everyone. Mm-hmm. There's going to be shows where you're like, why am I doing this? Yeah. I want to quit. And the next day could be a show where you're like, oh, this is exactly why I do this.
Yeah, and why
we'll continue to do it. It's up and down for everyone at every level.
Yeah, yeah. Literally drove an hour, 40 minutes to get to the show on Saturday. I was like, man, this better be good because this is
And it was Holly, too. So she's like, I remember Yoshi's show. I'm going to show him.
Yeah, and she puts on a hot show. That Covington show, hot show, great crowd, very into it. I closed it out, and it was just I was like, ah, thank you. I was like, it was just like refreshing just to get that stank off, right?
Yeah.
And I'm also like me, when I have a good show like that, I'm always, I don't know why, but I'm also looking for like, all right, I need to get dirty again.
Oh yeah.
We gotta get dirty again. We gotta find an open mic where there's crickets in the back, just to keep you honest.
Back in the trenches.
But yeah. So yeah, that was
that's a great comedy weekend though. A down and an up.
Mm-hmm.
You got to experience all of it and learned a lot of lessons along the way there.
Mm-hmm. I was like, ugh. That's what happens when you trust white people.
Do not negotiate with terrorists. Yes. White devil. Especially drunk white people. You don't want any of that.
From the suburbs, too.
Ugh. Yeah. Entitled white people.
Yeah. 401k whites?
But speaking of drunk white people... Our guest today is actually doing an amazing event. He has now done 10 of these events.
Yeah.
They've been featured on NPR. He's really making waves in Atlanta and beyond doing his new show called Stand Up for Recovery, where it's sober comedians performing. And it's really struck a chord with the city of Atlanta and beyond. And I'm so excited to have him on here, as this Sunday, he's actually doing a brunch Stand Up for Recovery show. And this is going to be a clean show as well. So this is a guy creating his own opportunities, not waiting for someone to give him permission. And he's doing it all while empowering other comedians, which is what we're all about here at Hot Breath. So without further ado, let's welcome to the show, Mr. Richie Satori, everyone. Let's bring him in here. Thanks for hanging out with us, Richie. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah. Thank you, man. Great to be on your pod with y'all. Love y'all both. Love the show.
Appreciate you, man.
Heads out there. Yeah, man. Appreciate the intro. Oh, I was like, here comes the segue.
Speaking of drunk white people.
I'm a quarter Sicilian, so I'm not the entire problem, but no.
Oh, he's not even claiming us anymore. He changed. He got sober and switched up. Well, tell us, Richie. Yeah, give us the Oh, and Kathy says hey in the live chat as well. Hey Kathy, thanks for hanging out.
Give us the
Hot Breathiverse that may not know, maybe a little bit of your background. I know you've done a lot of cool things. Give us some context for Richie Satori here.
Oh, a little bit about me. So when I was 13, I was going to run away and join the circus. I'd moved from the Washington, D.C. area to what felt like the middle of nowhere. Couldn't wait to get out. Didn't fit in. My parents found out I was going to run away and join the circus, and they shut that down. And they're like, you're not running away and joining a circus, but we'll drive you. And so my mom and grandmother... Legit, like we packed up the Chrysler LeBaron. We headed up to one of the Barrys in Connecticut. Rogers Brothers Three Ring Circus. It was like the generic store brand of circus kingdom, like coming to a Walmart parking lot near you. And it was lit. It was not what I expected, and so that was the beginning of my circus career, like a couple decades ago, or beginning of my comedy career. So when people ask how long you've been doing comedy, I know they're talking about stand up, but somewhere between
started drinking
12 years and 35 years. Yeah. Yeah, no, it was the substances, I guess, kind of came early. Like my gateway was prescription uppers, which I immediately started abusing. I thought that would pass the time quicker when I moved to the country, but that's not how speed works, apparently. But yeah, now I've been clean now a little over 10 years. I'm in my 10th year of continued sobriety. But
congratulations. Yeah.
Congratulations, Richie. Yeah, yeah.
Appreciate that. But I went to school for acting. Like, I always enjoyed doing comedy, but it was never like myself. I was in New York for a period of time. I was actually attempting political comedy, which I don't recommend. At least, particularly before you develop your own comedic voice, and no one right. wanted to hear the political views of a 23-year-old, you know. at least nowadays, maybe different, but yeah. So I did a comedy workshop with Dan Adute, very funny comedian. He did like Leno back in the day. Hilarious guy, great teacher, and he taught from like Judy Carter's book.
Hilarious,
which was awesome. Yeah, great. And love Judy, shout out to her. But yeah, so I got a taste of stand-up. I really enjoyed it, but it was like I was not ready to really be myself on stage, which, you know, there's always my favorite rule in comedy is that there are no rules, but it seems to be you know, helpful if you're willing to practice some honesty on stage. But anyway, fast forward, I went to school for acting, North Carolina School of the Arts. Shout out to the Flying Pickles, the Fighting Pickles, equally ridiculous name. But I inevitably got arrested. I was in like Montreal. I was training to be with Cirque du Soleil, yada yada, and then kind of spiraled the drain there. You know, I was generating my hour, but. You know, I inevitably got arrested, and then, you know, something clicked early on in my recovery. I was facing like felony charges. Like it was a dark horizon. And something clicked probably in my third or fourth meeting. I'm like, oh, I need to do stand up. You know what I'm saying? I had a taste of it. I'm writing down these, like, basically these setups for jokes that were just like these depressing facts about myself that I was like, yeah, that's accurate. And, I had to petition the judge to be able to go to take stand-up classes because I had my acting training. I said it was a writing class. It was work-related. So, I just kept taking that class again and again and again. So that was sort of the, you know, how I kind of got into stand-up. And I found it very therapeutic. I was afraid to share at meetings. I thought if I did, somebody would, you know, come up in court somehow and incriminate myself and but if I did it, I'm in stand up. I could be like, Your Honor, I was just kidding.
Right.
That was like my brilliant logic. But yeah, man, I started writing autobiographically, which I had gleaned through podcasts and so forth that's a good way to write. It's harder for people to bite your jokes, you know. Etc. And at some point, the actor in me kind of was like, I wonder if I have a one man show. I think I was at a meeting and I heard the expression. I was at like a recovery convention and someone's like, monkey's off my back, but the circus is still in town. And of course, that set off a light bulb that was like a triple entendre for me. So I basically put all my stand up in chronological order and started doing fringe festivals. Moved from Richmond, Virginia to, you know, starting to travel around in my first van, which was an early symbol of freedom for me. You know, I couldn't drive, I couldn't do anything. So, you know, that was helped me be able to tell my story. And I got really into like storytelling, stand up. And but yeah, I've been in Atlanta coming up on 3 years, not quite 3 years.
Nice. But
yeah, had a lot of.
Hey, Richie, what? How long you been doing stand up?
So, you know, if you, it's one of those questions, like from beginning till now, you know, so those first 2 years I was like on probation. So that was like once a week at best. And then you have COVID. So I want to say I probably started around 2013. And then, you know, so somewhere between around 12 years to probably closer to like nine.
Gotcha. You know what I'm saying? When did you start the sort of recovery stand-up show? Like, how did that come about?
pretty early. I think I was at like a recovery related convention. They shall remain anonymous. But there was like a comedy show and it was just kind of blew my mind. And yeah. And then I came across, Mike DiStefano, who had, you know, Last Comic Standing, and, he was very popular in the recovery circuit, RIP, Mike D. But, you know, so I started like, getting like speaker tapes at these recovery conventions, like you got any Mike D speaker tapes, you know? And man, just his like sort of irreverence yet. Like this is like something that saved his life, but he didn't take it too seriously. You know what I mean? He took his recovery seriously, but didn't take himself too seriously. And, didn't put anything up on like a pedestal. And that just really was like, I was like, oh, you can pretty much say anything. You know what I mean? Like, so I teamed up with some people on the West Coast that were doing something similar, and I would send them videos and they were never like, yo, like, don't quit your day job, you know? But they were just like, keep writing, man. Keep going.
Yeah.
Like last place, you could do it.
You're on to something. Yeah.
So like I got some encouragement there. And then on the local level, you know, for like little smaller conventions, I was able to be like, hey, do you guys have a comedy show or do you want one? Like just basically doing a lot of free shows in the, that sort of market that I was like passionate about. Like, honestly, I don't think I would have gotten into stand up had I not, you know, destroyed my life with drugs and, everything. So it's like, I kind of exist for that community. And I've listened to like a lot of podcasts. CD Baby used to have like some, probably still does have some good podcast on like DIY musicians. And a lot of that I find applicable to comedy. And, you know, we hear about like it could take 10 years to find your audience. And I'm like, well, here's my audience. So I don't want to pigeonhole myself too much. Like, you know, I have to work out my material in front of normies, as we call y'all. Sorry. But
oh, normies.
Normies. Yeah.
That's what they call people who are not in the circus.
Yeah. No, when I did when I performed at a fetish convention, they called me a mundane. So oh, I guess all you people have your terms for us squares.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
that's funny.
Yeah, that was just like, that's kind of how I got in. Like it became sort of part of my recovery journey, so to speak, not to sound too lame, but yeah. And then just, you know, opportunities would kind of grow, and a lot of, you know, bombing in front of like audiences. You know, I try to make my jokes applicable to the general population and stuff, but like be one of those things, like you're talking about, like these hell gig followed by like this, you know, the best gig ever, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm funny, I'm not crazy, to be like in front of my people type of thing. But I do kind of pride myself on being able to hopefully make any audience laugh, you know. So that's important to me too, and it kind of keeps things balanced. I want to put all my eggs in one basket.
Very cool.
So I want to put all my crack in one pipe, you know.
Oh, is that what you were into? Is that what you were?
It was a little bit. I mean, I don't want to have like a chip on my shoulder, but like I free-based cocaine. Thank you very much.
You said that very elegantly.
A nuanced difference. I was a gentleman.
I didn't do crack. I free-based cocaine.
Yeah. I mean, like, free-based in cocaine.
It was a digestif. A nice digestif after a night of meth. It's a good palate cleanser.
God. Oh, right.
So you're into all of it. You were into all of it. Which is tough. I mean, in comedy, you know, I've seen people go down that road that. Yeah. A lot of our shows are in bars. It may be around seedy people, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, maybe if there's a comedian out there listening to this who maybe feels like they are on that trajectory, do you have any advice or tips on how to steer the ship?
Yes. Don't do it. Work for your dad's real estate company. No, I mean,
do they do corporates? They booking any corporate events this year? Holla at your boy. Holiday party?
I'm working on starting some recovery-oriented sober open mics. My goal is to have like at least once a week between like Athens and here and around the perimeter and inside. you know, some kind of a recovery open mic where people can get up and get weird and like get esoteric and talk, have like an environment that's not a bar, essentially. The
you know, Richie is in Atlanta, by the way, just so people.
Yeah.
We're on the podcast. I think I mentioned that at his intro.
Okay.
I think, but based in Atlanta. Yeah.
I don't want people to think it's Athens, Greece. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, right. Yeah.
We get around, bro.
Yeah. But that's cool. You have such a clear vision for, I think that's important as we talk about like that DIY hustle in the comedy game. It is having a clear vision for if you want to start a show, it's like, okay, why? What do you hope to achieve out of it? What do you hope to get out of it? Do you want it to grow from like an open mic to a showcase, or do you want it to be like a branded show that you can take around the country? I think those are all important questions to ask for anyone on that DIY journey and to really give it some serious thought beyond, let me just start a mic.
Right, exactly, And we want to do all that, honestly. It started with, you know, a quarterly show, or actually started with like an annual show, Stand Up for Recovery Comedy Fest. We did that at the Punchline. That was awesome. I had like two hernia surgeries in 2022. So our next show didn't happen until the next year. We did that at Atlanta Comedy Theater. And Gary was like, do you want to, he's like, I see your audience. I say, I like what you're doing. He's like, do you want to do a monthly show? And in my mind, I had been ready to try to step up to a quarterly show since the year before, but I just kind of, I was like, you know, maybe it's a sign, you know, like kind of careful what you wish for, careful what you pray for type of thing. Like, cause I was like, I want to do this full time. And so since last September, I've just really leaned into it. Like, I don't know if you can tell by my, my office here, but you know, I have a low overhead, literally.
Hilarious. Are you in a van?
I'm in a van. Yeah. And so that has allowed me to do this full time, to make that jump. In full time, mainly because that's how much time it seems to require for at least somebody like me, like ADHD AF, like to just produce a show, put together a show. And we have like an initiative to try to get overdose reversal medication into comedy venues, which are bars and clubs, you know, around Georgia. So it's not like, it would be a little bit easier if we had like a consistent spot that we were at, like every month you can find us here on this date, but we were trying to kind of move it around too. And we'd like to settle into some consistency as far as like our location. But so there's that. We do the monthly show. And we're trying to attract national touring headliners who happen to be sober or in recovery and, you know, multiple pathways, you know, whatever that might be. And we try to, as we're reducing stigma in the public space against, you know, addiction in recovery, we're doing that with mental health recovery as well, to a lesser extent, but that's important for me. And then, you know, we want to do pop-up shows. Not everybody in like early recovery is like ready to go to a comedy club, because it is, you know, it is what it is. Like still like a bit of a bar industry, right, to say the least. So we're doing pop-up shows. Thursday we're going to be in Conyers at a place, you know, that's like an intensive outpatient center, and we're bringing the comedy club experience to them. And you know, I've performed in jails over the years, like you know, so I'm, if I never step foot, don't quote me on this, in an actual comedy club again, I wouldn't be too mad, because like I said, like I do comedy for the recovery community first and foremost. I love performing everywhere.
Yeah. No, that's awesome that you found like your niche. You found the thing
that
you're passionate about.
Yeah.
And you're going after it, and you sort of set up your life as well. Like at first I thought you were like SpongeBob SquarePants with that background. And I was wondering
where the background.
I was also wondering when you were going to give Will Smith his hat back from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
That's a great roast for people listening to the podcast. Yeah, that's a great roast for people listening to the audio only version.
No, for sure.
Like,
I mean,
oh, like, we got him.
Will Smith hat head ass.
He does look like a white Will Smith. So, you know, before the punch. But I think that's cool that you found the niche. You're going after it, like you sort of set up your life for that thing, and you're still doing the comedy part, a la doing the open mics, trying to find other venues to like do the thing. As you're like going through all this, I guess what's like the biggest thing that you have learned about sort of just producing these shows that you would share with other comedians?
Well, I think one of the beautiful things about being artists, which I include, you know, stand up as, you know, we're creatives. It's just easier. It's better. It's more fun to collaborate with other people. I mean, we can try to do it all by ourselves, but at the end of the day, like, why would you, if, you know, so I couldn't do, I don't feel like I could do it without community support, without people who believed in me, you know, without the Garys who are like, hey, do you want a monthly versus me being like, I'm going to do a quarterly. People in the recovery community in Georgia is very strong. And so, you know, in my mind, I'm like, I have like a lot of, you know, I've dealt with, it's gotten better. But like a lot of negative self-talk and this, that, and the third. So when other people see what you're doing and are like, yeah, we're about it. It's very therapeutic. And so we have community partners now that, help us get the word out. We've had a little financial support, which takes the burden off my neck to try to, you know, put into marketing, which, you know, I was just on a call today with a group called Georgia Recovers, and they were trying to talk about a little bit about how they use Meta platform to try to reach people. Cause it's just tricky. And sometimes you feel like you're throwing money at the wind, but, I heard it on a podcast at some point where they were like, you know, they took their definition of success from like selling out a show to being like, hey, if we get 50 people here and these people are having a good time, like it was a successful show. And so I just, tried to lower, and I don't say lower my expectations, that sounds like giving up, but you know what I mean? Like just kind of trust the process, let go and, you know, see what happens. And just, you know, it's a monthly reprieve, you know, it's part of it in a business sense. It's brand, you know, you're building a brand, you're building your audience. Yeah. And at the end of the day, I think first and foremost, the product's got to be tight, you know? So I always try to, I'm not going to skimp on my lineups to make, you know, to stay out of the red this month, because the best advertising we have moving forward is everybody that was at that show. They talk, you know what I mean? So I feel like pretty proud of our lineups. I tend to overbook. That's a thing. And then I realized, you know, most comedies, our favorite thing is more time on stage, right? So I'm like, you know, I can do more time. I host the show so I can kind of like be in the background on every show as a producer and promoter. So that's helpful. But, you know, I'm like, I can always do a little more time if someone bails. People are more inclined to bail if the show's overbooked. So I've gotten a little bit better on that. But I think just, you know, F with the people that F with you is one of my mentors. Malachi Black told me, shout out to Malachi. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah. And just kind of like give yourself some grace, and you know, everything takes time. It takes time to build rooms, it takes time to build your set, it takes time, you know, to grow as a person. And you know, it's good to have these goals and so on and so forth, but just enjoy the process, you know. But look for opportunities. If your goal isn't not to get rich quick, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to perform, but know your value. So I feel like this stuff I've probably heard on your podcast before, but you know, once you've establish what your rate is or what you're worth and stuff, you know, like, you know, you kind of got to be able to stick to that too, or else you wind up shooting yourself in the foot down the road. But you know, I try to just, you know, I try to just trust my heart, trust my gut. You know, there's like I said, I didn't get paid to perform in a jail, but that was like probably my favorite experience ever. You know, talk about a captive audience. I'm such an idiot, dude. I got there and I was running late, and I'm like, I am so sorry to keep you guys waiting. Oh my God. I was very self-aware.
That's
meanwhile, there's a guy with like an AK standing behind me. We had very good security.
I love that. I love that, man. Yeah, and setting that intention from the beginning, I think that is important, as we've referenced on this episode today, of just the highs and lows of comedy. I think it helps for comics to remember why they started and what are they hoping to get out of this. I know from me producing my own shows as well, anytime I've produced a show from the mindset of, I got to sell this out, I got to get people in here, I got to sell. And that's a great, selling out is awesome. But making that the motivator, it sets the wrong intention.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. And your energy of that also translates into how you show up. So like,
and how you promote it too. Like, gimme,
get this out. No one wants to go to the promoter that's like, yeah, we got to pack this out. That doesn't sound fun. But if if you come from the energy of, hey, you're going to have a good time if you go to the show. Like, this is going to be a banging show. I curate my lineups. This is going to be fun. You're going to have a good time. I promise you're going to have a good time. And if you don't have a good time, you know, leave a comment card and I'll make sure to throw it away kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? But like, just if you curate the right kind of vibe for the show, it's super important. And to your point, like we say this, be funny and be nice. The funny part is actually going to get you more bookings. And people are going to, like you said, tell their friends, yeah, we went to a Richie Satori show and we had a good old time. We'd go again.
You made me think of one thing. I got to see, I'm always blank on his name, but he was on In Living Color. I don't want to throw him under the bus, actually. I've done security at a couple comedy clubs over the years. Gave me an opportunity. You know, I think I used to hear about the old stories, the old pathways to getting stage time was like, it started as the door guy, you know. But, I hope I never get jaded to be like, spiteful to the X amount of people that are there for you, you know, like that is nothing more cringe than seeing somebody take out their, you know, whatever, their pity on themselves for not selling the place out on the people that actually did show up. Like, so I've street performed. I don't know if I mentioned, I don't think I mentioned that in my story, but I street performing, like talking about a humbling.
Yeah.
Humbling experience, you know what I mean? Like, part of me is like, I need to street perform throughout my whole career just to, like,
you started and said that you ran away to go to the circus.
Right. By street perform, he meant sleeping on the actual street. That's what he means by sleep performing.
No.
He was sleeping on the street. Grateful and treating the people there.
Oh, for
giving them the show they deserve.
Absolutely. I used to busk in New York at the ferry where they would take the boat across to see the Statue of Liberty, and talk about, I don't know what the term is, idiot perhaps, but like, I see people that are like, look white, and I'm like, oh, they must speak English. And so I'm doing this, you know, a physical comedy talking act, but most people are from like another country and don't speak English. And I performed in San Francisco at like some great locations, but like I couldn't get a spot until like 1 a.m. and also I was like pretty stoned, but I self-sabotaged myself. I think it was like, so if I bombed, I would be like, well, it's you know, it's 3 a.m. and there's 5 people on the pier and half of them are, you know, conscious, but
the other half are the plugs. They're just waiting on you to get off so they can sell. That's all they're
right.
I forgot where I was going. I don't know. There's a question in the live chat here of asking, his name Society Runs Backwards, the top 3 advice for how to improve at stand up in your first year. And there's 3 of us, so maybe we could each do one.
Nice.
So, Richie, you're the guest. Would you like to go first or last?
First year, I'll go ahead and start rambling.
Yeah.
One thing, Richie. Don't make us
do one. Do one thing, man.
I will light your behind so quick. I will light you so quick.
So one thing to improve at stand up in your first year.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say
never run the light.
I'm
just kidding.
Right. Don't run the light. Whether it's a notebook or an audio file. Write it down, document it. And I say audio file too, so you can capture the emotion of what's going on, what upsets you, what makes you laugh, what you say that makes people laugh, anything like a top 10, you know, try to write, you know, 10 things a day and then look at it back a week later. But like, you tell people that advice, like they say something that's like got potential of being comedy gold and you're like, write that down. They're like, and then they don't. And it's like, mm-hmm. it's, why, you know, that's, yeah, comedy is worth more and in weight than gold. Write it down.
Honor that idea by writing it down. Give it the respect it deserves. And it's a gift. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, honor it and treat it as a gift and write it down. Type it in your phone or have a piece of paper, a notebook. But yes, that's a great note there. Yeah. How about you, Yoshi?
I would say try to find as many opportunities just to get up on stage. Mm-hmm. I think in your first year, you got to throw caution to the wind and know and just understand that it's okay if you're not getting the laughs. You're just getting better at being on stage. You're just getting better at finding your voice. You're just getting better at the whole comedy thing. Do not expect gold year one. Like, yes, are there people out there that are freaking crushing at year one? Of course there are. But the majority, the major majority, 99.9.3, whatever the percentage is, are simply trying to figure out how to make people laugh. So the way you do that is to get up on stage as often as possible in as many venues, no matter what it is. I say first year, you know, you might heard of people doing urban rooms versus main rooms. It doesn't matter. Do every room. Do a Richie room. Do a Joel room. Do a Yoshi room. It doesn't matter. Do a room. Do a strip club. Do a nightclub. Do any room that you can get stage time. Getting good at being on stage is going to set you apart more than anything else in comedy.
Yeah, and I'm resisting the answer of telling people to join one of my workshops. I won't say to join the wait list for my next workshop that'll be linked in the description.
Yeah,
this
episode. You could do a 3B. How about the workshop is a 3B? What's number three?
Yes. Number three is honestly, and this is something Richie referenced earlier, the community aspect of comedy is that when you're at these shows, and this is something I didn't do early on, is connect with other comedians, really be a part of the community. And that doesn't necessarily mean everyone. That means connect with comedians that you see are also doing the work. They're not there to get drunk. They're not there to bum cigarettes. They're there to actually, you see them proactively trying new stuff on stage, trying to develop as a comedian, putting in the work. Connect with those comedians and get a part of that community. You know, we have a Facebook group as well where comics all over the world are helping each other. And Richie really hit it on the head there of community is really the secret sauce in this comedy game that's going to help you celebrate the highs and to persevere the lows. So get involved in the community and with the comics that you aspire to be like and that you want to work with, because you are the product of the five people around you. And that is very true in comedy, as we referenced. You know, it's you're in some shady places and there's people doing, you know, things that could set you on different paths in your career. And I've seen people go down the wrong path and it doesn't end well for them. So if you really want to, and it sounds like the question was very sincere, if you really want to improve in your first year, really connecting with other inspired comedians like you is really going to help you to have accountability and to also just iron sharpens iron. So connect with other comedians.
So if we were to summarize it, it is write a lot and find a place to write and find whatever avenue of how you ever take notes, note taking.
Take notes of all your joke ideas. Make sure you
keep
track of
them. Get on stage as much as humanly possible, as much as you can and how much you are able to. And number three, connect with people and get comfortable, especially with people that you want to be like. You'll be very surprised how many OG comedians are willing to give you advice if you just ask, right? Make sure you ask. Don't just go up there and just be like, oh, tell me something. You know what I'm saying? You got to be able to ask, got to be nice about it. And 3B, sign up for Joel's Clean Comedy Course. That's pretty much where it is right there.
There it is.
That's a
summary. There you go, kids. That that is linked in the description of this episode. And a good icebreaker, if you want to talk to a comic, compliment one of their jokes.
Boom.
You know, this is something I struggled, I'm telling you, for years. And I'm still not great at it. But a great icebreaker, if you are nervous to talk to another comedian, just compliment one of their jokes. And it's a great way to get the conversation going. But this has been great. I'm so excited for what you're building, Richie, and to see it from the beginning and how it's developed and evolved and expanded. You know, for people that aren't, you say from the rooter to the tutor?
Yep. I mean, you just got it. Like
it's more from the tutor to the rooter. The tutor was what we used to call the bell you roll up.
That's a tutor? Wow. That was a tutor. Yoshi triggered you without even knowing it. He was trying to be funny, and now.
That's why I live in a van. Everything else in the world is a trigger. So
well, where
the van?
Yeah. That's
where
so
can people connect with you, Richie? And maybe I know the show. This show we're promoting is for this Sunday, and it's a brunch show at Atlanta That's Comedy right. Theater, which is an awesome venue here in the Atlanta area. So yep. Where can people get more info about that if they want to go and also connect with you and follow and stay along with your journey and support you?
Yeah, you can check me out on standup4recovery.com. So standup4recovery.com, standup4recovery.com. And we're on social media at standup4recovery, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Our YouTube, I believe, is standup recovery comedy because the other was taken. But yeah, and... We have a link on the website and in the bio on social media. But if you go to our Instagram, standup4recovery, there's we have a small amount of tickets that have a reduced fee. If you get on our mailing list, that's a great thing. You know, and we'll try to give out discount codes when we can. If people are celebrating a sober anniversary, you know, we give them a shout out on stage, and a free t-shirt. This is our logo, Stand Up for Recovery.
Nice.
You know, we embrace multiple pathways. You know, we do a naloxone training as part of the show. So people, you know, inadvertently get trained on how to save someone's life.
Wow.
And just to put it out there, like, I don't know, for people that are in Georgia, there is a thing called the 911 amnesty law. So if somebody is suspected of ODing and you call, they're protected and you're protected no matter if you have any personal use, anything in your pockets. So that's pretty awesome. That's saved over 10,000 lives. We've teamed up with Georgia Overdose Prevention, who put that law into legislation in action, along with their trainings, you know, over 10,000 lives. So we've trained over 500 people this year just on stage at our shows alone, which is really exciting. But yeah, that's the best way to connect. My personal, because Richie, Richard, Dick, you can follow me at Dick Jokes on Instagram. That's my personal stand up. Instagram.
What?
Yeah, it's for sale too. If you want to do an auction.
Oh, that's gangster, dude.
It's branding.
Wow, that's so good.
I used to do websites for comics. Like, talk about, like, you know, networking and picking comics' brains. I was like, I started doing websites for comedians, and I figure, you know, get them in that spot where they start to get more work than they have time for managing their, you know, online stuff. You know that. That's you know, like, kind of trying to, like, those five people that you raise to the level of you right. surround yourself with. So anyway, whenever a new social media thing came out, I would just get in the habit of downloading it, and I do think I just did that on a whim, and I was like, oh, it's available. So that's unfortunately my biggest credit is that that's my handle. But
hilarious.
No, yeah. I got some other credit, you know. I was on Comedy Hype's Hot 100 Comics to Watch at the DC Comedy Festival, like, in 2018, and got a little Hulu credit from Class of
About your credits, you got dickjokes.com. That's it.
I know. Yep. Yeah, but that is.
I mean, that's enough. Like, you
I
should
got
just
to do something with Funny Marco.
That every time you're on stage, ladies and gentlemen, dickjokes.com.
Dick jokes.
But see, I've got anxiety, so by being a producer of Stand Up for Recovery, it's great because I can get on something like this and not be nervous, and, like, because I'm promoting something bigger than myself. So that's something that, you know, I know a lot of us have some, you know, stage fright affects, you know, everybody, and anxiety and so on and so forth. But that's, you know, get involved in something that's bigger than yourself, and then you can really, like, really lean into it, and it doesn't feel like work, and it gets me outside of myself. But yeah, if you all want to connect that way, and you know, you're interested in try, you know, maybe you're sober curious or whatever, and you want to try an open mic that's not at a bar, or maybe you're, you know, I think by being not in bars, you know, people who are like, you know, 18 could come and do our mics. Mm-hmm. We were just trying to build something for the core community so they feel supported. And then I think, you know, we're not going to like be like exclusive. We just want to make sure that we establish a vibe first that people can respect. And, but yeah, that's the best way. Ticket link is in the website at the top. We always update the next shows. And we're starting, we're going to be, just got a gig in Florida, and actually it's Clean, you know, it's like I broke the seal on Clean.
I
respect people who work Clean, and I'm hoping to add myself to that list of people I respect. But yeah, nice. So our next show is Clean. Very excited that Josh Harris is headlining, the great Josh Harris, and out of respect for him, and you know, we're putting together a Clean lineup. And it's great. And you know, what I found out is like 75% of my material already is Clean. You know, and it's that mental hurdle. It's one of those early things, because going for shock is such a easy thing, or, you know, low hanging fruit or impulse when you first start comedy. But, you know, you got to play these things, in moderation, or else like it's not shocking. But yeah, I want to be able to do college shows and, stuff that's a little bit more corporate leaning and so on, speaking. So shout out to the Clean comedy scene. Like, I've definitely I appreciate the opportunity to be able to step up and really work on what that looks like for me. Now, like, a Clean show for us might not be a Clean show for somebody else, because we're definitely talking about, you know, drugs and everything. But
Sweet,
beautiful.
Dude.
I love it. I love comics creating their own opportunities and doing it with intention. That's beautiful, Richie. I think you inspired a lot of people today, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, brother.
Man. For real.
You're
for
a huge
real.
Inspiration, man. You know, I've been admiring what y'all do for a long time, and it's a huge honor to be on the pod. You know, you guys are great. You do a lot so much for the community. And I love that it's international, man. That's what's up. So please don't hesitate to reach out. If you have a problem and you want to talk to somebody or whatever, like, I work in the field, I'm happy to listen. I'll give you my number, you know, like, shoot me a DM. If anybody, you know, needs some resources, I'm available. You know, that's what keeps me so helping other people. So
that's super dope.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, well, man, definitely. Hot Breathverse, go connect with Richie if you can. Go to his show this Sunday, but definitely follow his journey. He's doing a lot of positive things in the comedy world, which is what we're trying to do here at Hot Breath. So please, if you're listening to the podcast, join us every Tuesday live on our YouTube channel. And that's really the show for today. I think we've nailed it. So for Joel Byers and Yoshi So, Richie Satori, we'll see y'all next Tuesday.
We out, yeah.
Hot Breath.